Walmart is Fortune magazine's most admired company for 2 years running. Its $245 billion in sales makes it the largest company anywhere. Its sales are greater than the gross domestic product of Switzerland. Last year, 82% of American households bought something at a Walmart. It is the largest employer in 21 states. In fact, after the federal government, Walmart is the largest employer in America with more than 925,000 employees. Each year, the company hires 550,000 more employees. That's three times the number of people the U.S. military recruits every year. Freelance journalist Liza Featherstone is the author of Selling Women Short, The Landmark Battle for Workers' Rights at Walmart. On November 9th, Liza Featherstone read from her book at Women and Children First Books on North Clark Street in Chicago. Featherstone described how Walmart's corporate success comes at a great cost to its workers. She began by reminding us of the TV commercials that we see every day.
"It's not easy to have a family and a career," says the woman in the commercial earnestly. "But my company makes it a lot easier. My company takes family very seriously." The woman, Margaret, is shown at home, spending relaxed quality time with her husband and children. Beginning in mid-2003, the American TV viewer was bombarded with advertisements like this one from a very surprising source, Walmart. The commercials were light on details. Margaret, a district manager for the retail chain, which is a very demanding job, never says what Walmart does exactly to help her balance motherhood with her job, but inspiringly upbeat. In a similar ad, a middle-aged black woman talks about her successful career as a Walmart department manager, smilingly pronouncing it a company of great opportunity for women. The woman says she is so pleased with her Walmart career that she urged her daughter to apply for a job with the company. Now both mother and daughter are enthusiastic members of the Walmart family. Had the nation's favorite retailer shed its famously conservative music-censoring image and embraced a women's rights agenda? Not yet. These ads were part of a concerted attempt by the company to stave off a public relations disaster, a disaster personified by a woman who actually looks very much like the happy, nameless department manager in the commercial, but whose experience working for Walmart was exactly the opposite. That woman was Betty Dukes, a 54-year-old Walmart worker in Pittsburgh, California. Like her TV counterpart, she is African-American and came to Walmart hoping to succeed. She was attracted by the idea of opportunity for women. She was first hired by the company in 1994 as a part-time cashier at $5 an hour. She was an eager employee with a sincere admiration for founder Sam Walton's visionary spirit. And a year later, she had excellent performance reviews. She was given a merit pay raise, and her part-time job turned into a full-time job. 2 years after that, she was promoted to the position of customer service manager, which sounds very lofty. Walmart does this a lot. It's an hourly position, but they give you the word manager in the title so that you feel more important. She began encountering harsh discrimination from her superiors. She says she was denied the training she needed to advance further, and that same training was given to male employees, many of whom were younger and newer to the company. When Dukes complained about the discrimination, her managers got back at her by writing her up for minor offenses, like returning late from breaks, offenses that were routinely committed by her white and male coworkers, and they were never punished. When she kept complaining, she was denied a promotion and eventually demoted back to her cashier jobs. She went to the Walmart district office to complain, but the company did nothing. Being demoted was not only humiliating, it also disqualified her from other promotions. And her cashier job offered fewer hours and a lower hourly wage. When she was again eligible for promotion, four new management positions, which had never even been announced, never been posted, were filled by men. In late spring 2000, she filed a claim against the company. And the next year, she became the lead plaintiff in Dukes versus Walmart stores, which is a class action representing 1.6 million women, as you just heard, past and present employees of the company. And that suit was filed in June 2001. And it charges the company with discriminating against women in promotions, pay, and job assignments, basically for violating the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which says you cannot discriminate against workers based on sex, race, religion, or national origin. And now, Betty is a Baptist pastor. She's a very, very religious woman. And she uses a story from Scripture to explain her case to fellow churchgoers, who are mostly elderly and Black. They understand David and Goliath, she says. I tell them, Betty Dukes versus Walmart is like David versus Goliath. And it's true that the biblical David could never have anticipated a Goliath of this scale. Topping the Fortune 500 in both 2002 and 2003, and again this year, Walmart is the world's largest retailer. Its sales totaled $244.5 billion last year. And just to put that in perspective, it dominates the retail sector overwhelmingly. It's much more than twice the size of its largest U.S. competitor, Home Depot. In this lawsuit, Walmart has defended itself by arguing that stories like Betty's stem from a few bad managers, a few knuckleheads, as those were the exact words of a Walmart spokeswoman, Mona Williams, last year, summing up the complex legal argument. It's a few knuckleheads. And unfortunately, as the numbers show, Betty's experience is hardly an isolated one. Women make up the majority of Walmart workers, but just over a third of the salaried management. And in fact, the percentage of women among Walmart management in 1999, 34.5%, was less than that of its competitors in 1975. So, you know, long before there was that much consciousness in the business world about women's rights. Women are also paid less than men in nearly every position at the company. They also work in a startlingly hostile atmosphere. As you heard earlier, some of it is just really extraordinary. Kathleen McDonald, a candy clerk who's still working for Walmart in Aiken, South Carolina, asked her supervisor why her male coworkers made more money than she did. He gave her a creatively theological answer. God made Adam first, so women will always be second to men. Women in management are also told in many different ways that they don't belong. Melissa Howard, a store manager in Indiana. A store manager is the highest rank within a Walmart store that you can achieve. She had to attend business meetings at Hooters restaurants and visit strip clubs on business trips. She was eventually driven from her job by a district manager who felt that a woman with children shouldn't be managing a Walmart store. And this was something he actually said. It wasn't just like he thought that and found some other reason to get rid of her. I mean, these things are very often actually stated. The lawsuit reflects what Walmart represents, an increasingly prevalent business model in which every principle, including workplace fairness and equality, is sacrificed to one objective, which is giving the customer the lowest price. That's why Walmart's wages are so low, just over $8 an hour. And Walmart workers must pay more than a third of their own health insurance premiums. That's also why, in at least 40 states, Walmart has been accused of violating federal overtime laws. Workers have been encouraged to clock out and keep working. Sometimes managers lock the doors at the end of the shift and wouldn't let the employees go home. So given this single-minded focus on low prices and profits and the wage discrimination against the female workers, it's perhaps not surprising that many Walmart workers must depend on public assistance, food stamps, state health insurance, to get by. When we stand at the checkout line at Walmart, we may notice how much money we're saving, but we rarely consider that we may be paying, quite literally, in other ways. The public costs and the tax dollars that Walmart costs you don't appear on your receipt. Despite the fact that ordinary working people are the most hurt by Walmart's practices, the company sells itself actually as a champion of the ordinary person, and indeed kind of a personification of the ordinary person. Even today, When 5 of the 10 richest individuals in the world are close relatives of the Walmart founder, Sam Walton, it is still possible for Brenda Barrera, a call center worker in the company headquarters, who I interviewed on the town square of Bentonville, where Walmart is headquartered, right in front of the Walton's original Five and Dime store. She insisted to me that the Waltons are just normal people. They're just like you and me. And central to Walmart's commitment to ordinary folk is a promise of advancement. The company constantly assures workers that Walmart is a place of great opportunity and mobility, a place where hard work and sacrifice will be rewarded. One of the plaintiffs in Dukes versus Walmart, a woman named Cleo Page, who worked at Walmart stores in Oklahoma and California, said that her district managers would tell, they would tell you in the meetings, "I started out as a pushcart person." She recalls, "I'm thinking, wow, if they did it, then I can too." Each store has a picture of its store manager on the wall, and Cleo Page imagined hers would be hanging up on the wall one day. Another plaintiff in the lawsuit, Edith Arana, who worked just outside Los Angeles, agrees, "The impression I got was, as long as you work hard, there's nothing you can't do in this company." The interesting thing about Dukes versus Walmart is it is in itself a product of this company culture. The plaintiffs believed so fervently in Walmart's promises, and the lawsuit originates in their disappointment. To Betty Dukes, who still works at Walmart, she's a greeter now, that's the person who welcomes you to Walmart and when you leave, thanks you for shopping at Walmart. Walmart's rhetoric of opportunity rankles. "If you portray yourself to be a great place to work, a great place to grow and strive," she says, "then that's what you ought to be. They have not lived up to their great reputation." Edith Arana says when she worked at Walmart, she encouraged other women's faith in the Walmart culture. Her coworkers would complain about being asked to go beyond their duties. Arana says she would tell them, "Just do it with a smile," assuring them that someday they'd be rewarded with a promotion. I'd say, "Don't worry about it. Just go on and do it, because these are sacrifices that pay off in the end." Even as she was having her own doubts about Walmart's promises, she says, she tried to be upbeat when talking with her coworkers. But when she realized her own promotion, so often promised, was never going to come, she felt guilty about having encouraged so many other women to believe in the company. Being a plaintiff in this lawsuit is her way of making up to her coworkers. She is still deeply pained, feeling that she deceived them by being such a company booster. "Somebody has to stand up," she says. "I'll take that responsibility." Every day I keep picturing these women. They may not have the strength or the will to stand up to the company, but right now I do. She continues, "If I can stop one person from feeling a percentage of the humiliation that I felt, then I will feel good about that because of all the times that I didn't say something." She also feels embarrassed about having believed the Walmart promises. And a lot of women have echoed this. "I'm telling you," Arana says now, "I felt extremely used. I felt ashamed because I would have to tell somebody, I just went along with it. I can just see people being like, oh, duh." She compares Walmart to a bad boyfriend. "Despite all the disappointing things he does, you keep remembering when you first met him, and you keep on giving him another chance." "And that's how we get caught up," she continues. "They tell you exactly what you want to hear, but then you fall out of love and feel you were basically played."
That was Liza Featherstone, author of Selling Women Short, The Landmark Battle for Workers' Rights at Walmart. She spoke on November 9th at Women and Children First Books in Chicago. From the Trenches, I'm Kelly Pierce.